Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I talk about Ben Simmons showing up to the Wells Fargo Center unannounced. Just ridiculous. What the next phase of this circus could look like, and then give some of our impressions of the preseason so far, including the fact that Isaiah Joe needs to be in the rotation. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletics Podcast Network. We've had a couple of wins here, a couple of preseason wins, a nice bounce back win over bounce back, like anybody really cares. A win over the Toronto Raptors in a rematch, and then a win over the Brooklyn Nets when the Sixers were down pretty much everybody on the team who could dribble, which admittedly is not all that many, but they obviously had no Ben Simmons. They had no Shake Milton, no Tyrese Maxey, missing a lot of players, but Tobias Harris, who can sort of kind of dribble a little bit, and they were left with starting a backcourt of Furkan Korkmaz and Isaiah Joe. Pulled out a big win over Kevin Durant, James Harden, and the Brooklyn Nets. But that is not what we are going to talk about, lead this episode off with.
We'll talk about it a little bit, but nobody really cares, and unfortunately, I wish I cared. Yeah. Maybe we'll start caring in the regular season a little more.
A, because it's preseason, but B, because that never-ending story got yet another update, because that is the hell that we live in. But other than that, Rich, how are you doing?
I'm good. I wish I didn't have to care about this, what we're about to talk about for the next 23 minutes, because, you know, the Sixers got a couple of meaningless preseason wins. Great. They're about to get a bunch of PR losses, a bunch of crazy stories. This is, buckle up. This is about to be a pretty bumpy ride.
you say that like we haven't just spent the last 2 months living in this. But yeah,
okay. But let's call it what it is. Shit is about to get real.
Yeah. So Ben Simmons showed up, and it really is. He just sort of like showed up. We were sitting there at the Wells Fargo Center watching the game against the Nets. And word came down, you know, earlier in the day, both Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, our own Sham Sharania, both reported that talks were progressing towards Ben Simmons returning to the team.
Oh, they were progressing, all right.
Well, then, what was it? Third quarter, maybe? When did we get the Woj bomb? Second quarter, third, it doesn't matter. In the middle of the game.
That was 2 days ago. In this news cycle, I mean, come on, I can't remember that far.
In the middle of the game, we got word that Ben Simmons was here. Like, legitimately in the Wells Fargo Center. I don't think we knew that at the time he was in the Wells Fargo Center, but that he had reported. Not only that, because he can't just report in a normal fashion, Sixers didn't know he was going to show up until he showed up. And then we found out later from Woj that the way the Sixers found out was Elton Brand got a text message being like, Ben's outside. I don't even really know how to process that in a saga with many twists and turns that is definitely a weird one to cap off that leg of the saga. But after
have you ever done that, by the way? You ever just show up somewhere without telling anybody?
Like an Irish hello? I think that's the way you put it on our walk out of the practice facility earlier today.
An Irish entrance.
Yeah.
I've Irish exited
all the time. Irish goodbye is definitely a thing that I do. Yeah.
But have you, you know, for a work thing, for...
Certainly, I don't think for a work thing, no. That would be weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, if you have a 9-to-5 job, you have to tell everybody you're showing up to work that day.
But right.
For like a significant event, if you've been gone for a while.
What if I told my boss, hey, don't expect me in the office for the foreseeable future and then just show up that night? Like, no, I haven't done that. I don't have a direct correlation for that. But no, I haven't done that yet. Have you?
I don't think so. I mean, not for anything that I'm getting paid for, not for anything significant like that. Maybe I showed up at the bar unannounced or something like that.
Yeah, it might have been like your friends are like, hey, we're going out. Do you want to go? And you're like, yeah, nah, I don't really want. And then like an hour later, you get a little FOMO. Like maybe that might have happened. Sure. This was
okay.
Different.
So that's what we're comparing this to. This
showing up at a bar.
When Woj said that, I mean, it blew my mind. I mean, that was one of the funniest. It's easily the funniest thing he's ever said from his reporting. It was not, and that's, you know, he's terrific. But I mean, I don't know. Like he had trouble keeping it in for that report. I mean, it's just. And look, that is legitimately funny. I think you took a lot of joy out of that. It's clear. I laughed pretty hard when I heard that. Okay.
Tomorrow, when I get to the practice facility, I'm just going to text Elton and be like, "Hey, I'm here. Can you let me in? I'm here." We should all start texting Elton.
So that was really funny. So it's good. We got some. I don't know. Does that qualify as gallows humor? I don't know what the exact term of that is. Maybe it's just really funny, but it's about to not be funny. Okay. That's how I'm putting it. It's about to be draining. It's about to get ugly, I think. And I have no idea what's going to happen, but I guess you should fill everybody else in on the timeline because you're doing that right now.
Yeah. So he went, he met with Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey a couple of times there on Tuesday. He then was scheduled to take part in an individualized workout on Wednesday and could theoretically be cleared to rejoin the team as early as Friday. Now, according to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, and this is in the health and safety protocols, I'm just going to quote directly from her article. A player who is fully vaccinated against COVID-19 and who is entering the team environment for the first time needs to return at least one negative result from a PCR test facilitated by the team before interacting with other players and Tier 1 staffers, according to NBA protocols obtained by ESPN's Bob Marks. An unvaccinated player must return two negative tests before returning to the facility and participating in individualized workouts where no other player is present. If the player returns two more negative rapid molecular tests, he could then be cleared to interact with teammates and staff. So
Monday
again,
to Friday, is that four days?
Going back, Ben reported on Monday, got his first COVID test. Wednesday, he was scheduled to have an individualized workout with no other players present. Friday, he might be cleared. We don't know anything for certain, but you can read that report along with the facts that we just stated, which Doc Rivers told us, and come to a conclusion, which is just very, very disappointing. And look, I'm not going to get too deep on this. There's a lot more reasons that Ben Simmons is disappointing, but that is very, very disappointing if 2 + 2 is in fact equal to 4.
Wow. That's just great. Turn of phrase there. Nice work on that one, buddy. And also Doc Rivers said that the whole team is not, he would not say the whole team is vaccinated.
Yeah, which
back
is disappointing.
Training camp as well. So, I guess we'll see on that one.
Well, eventually Ben Simmons is going to have to talk to the media if he is in fact going to play, which I guess sort of brings us to our next phase of this conversation. So Doc was obviously asked about, you know, integrating Ben back and whether or not he expects him to play. So one of the questions that came up, is he here for procedural reasons or is he going to play? And Doc then sort of asked what the reporter meant by procedural reasons and is he here just so he doesn't get fined or is he going to play? Doc then said, I don't know that. I'm assuming he's going to play, but who knows, right? I don't know. I can't get in anyone's head.
Oh my God.
And I think the way Doc sort of took it was, I think he focused a little more on if he was just here for procedural reasons, but he did start it off with, I'm assuming he's going to play, but who knows, right? So that's maybe not the most reassuring answer. And I think Doc has a little bit, especially after last year where he kissed Ben's ass for so long. I think Doc right now has a little bit of Joel Embiid in him where there's like just 15, 20%, a little too honest, maybe even more, maybe like 50%. Doc is either on one extreme where he's like, you all are just making stuff up, or he's on the other extreme, it seems like. But maybe talk a little less like that. I can't imagine that's going to go over too well. He then said, what else? Is his preference still to be traded? Doc says, I don't know. I think he's voiced that, but we'll see how that works out. He was then asked whether or not Ben Simmons' heart is in it, is in playing here in Philly. I've learned one thing. I don't ever get in another man's head. I really don't. I actually get on my coaches when they tell me during a game or during a practice, I think what he was thinking. And then Doc stops him. And I always say, you don't know what he was thinking. You only know what he did. But, so the fact that he was here and he showed up and he conversated, all I know is his actions was that he showed up and he was here.
By the way, I asked him 2 days ago before the game, are you concerned that he's not going to be all the way bought in? And his answer to that was no, I'm not concerned. Right. So if you want to know, like, if Doc Rivers has a consistent answer here, he does not.
He does not. And there's a reason why you
wouldn't. Honestly, you could ask Doc Rivers, are you concerned about anything? And I think the answer would be no on that. At least I did. Like, are you concerned about world hunger or something like that? And I think he probably is, but he might say no just because you phrase it with, are you concerned?
So ahead. I think it's pretty clear that Doc doesn't entirely know what he's going to get out of Ben Simmons, that Ben is a little bit of a wild card here in that regard. And I think that's fair. I just don't think you necessarily want to vocalize it when you've got a player that you're trying to convince to stick around.
I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that's true. And now we have the situation where, like, it's a legitimate question of what the hell is this guy going to do now?
Yeah. And I think Jake Fisher, old colleague Jake Fisher, formerly of Liberty Ballers, another LB alum now of Bleacher Report. I believe in his article he had today, he had a number of things, but one of the things was that the Sixers internally do not know whether or not Ben Simmons will play, and they're just trying to get him cleared and through protocols, and then they will move on from there. So, like you said, there could be some fireworks here coming. This could be a little bit entertaining. Do you think he's going to play? Forget about what Doc has said. Forget about what others have reported. Do you think he's going to play?
I don't know. I mean, it's... I'm like, Doc, I can't get into this guy's head. I think that... I think he is going to play. Yeah, I do.
It would be really tough to hold out when you're around the team for this long. Like, if you're going to do that, I can't imagine the Sixers would pay him to come around and not actually be around the team.
What does he do? Does he pull the injury card too? But I don't know if you can pull the injury card anymore after you pull the brazen holdout card. I'm not sure what you could do. Like, maybe. I don't know. I definitely think I believe them when they say they want him to play.
Oh, sure.
I believe that.
I do too.
But I also, I would hope for their sake, they're going into this thing with eyes wide open, that him playing has a very good chance of, I'll curse, just being a fucking shit show for a million reasons.
It could. And I think...
And could is probably not strong enough. Like, it has like a 50-50 chance of being, maybe more than that.
So, like, what do you mean by shit show? Like, what exactly are we getting at here?
Does he try?
Well, no, I think that's pretty far out the window. I would be surprised if he gave at least consistent effort. Like, I think at sometimes, like, your competitive instincts might kick in, but I think it will be up and down for sure. For sure.
Is he bad enough where it's just impossible to play?
Even in the regular season, he would have to give pretty low effort to at least not be a rotation player. Like, his effort would have to be like complete shit show.
That's the main thing. I mean, I think he's going to get booed in his first game if he does play. And again, because I don't know. That's why I struggle with that question. I really do not know what is going to happen right now. I agree with Doc. I am not inside this guy's head. And we have, unlike Doc, we have not talked to him. So we don't know what is going on. I definitely think the first game is going to be the ugliest atmosphere we've seen for a home player ever.
If they had any sense of what they were doing, his first game would be on the road, right? Like, you're not going to bring him in for the first time in Philly.
Well, I mean, if he clears protocols, he could play next Wednesday in New Orleans. You know, I think he's, you got to play at home at some point, unless you're Kyrie Irving, but
he's not playing it on the road either. And good on them for that decision too. Good on the Brooklyn Nets for making that call.
Okay. So that's one thing. Does he try? Is he a pain in the ass in terms of behind the scenes? Again, we have said for a while that we don't think that is necessarily his personality. And somebody brought this up to me. So we have not had that in Philadelphia. We got Jimmy Butler after he did that in Minnesota. T.O. is the Philadelphia comparison to that.
Oh, sure.
T.O. was the pain in the ass after doing the sit-ups in the driveway and all that stuff. Does he do that? Outside of that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I really just think it's like his buy-in, his effort level. It's going to be the noise surrounding it is going to be ugly. It could be better if he plays hard. Like, I do think there is a world in which the outside noise, if Ben Simmons plays hard and they win at a top three seed level, yeah, he's still going to hear boos. Nobody is going to trust him again in Philadelphia. But I think, like all things, it will die down a little bit. And hey, maybe that helps him get traded. I have no idea what the right move is. Like, do you play hard to make your trade value better? Do you just tank it? So, hey, we got to get rid of this guy. He's got all of these options ahead of him. And it's, I guess, to wrap it up, because I'm rambling now. It's like we said a couple weeks ago, what is the bigger distraction? It's him being here.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And I think I get why Daryl and Doc want him back. I think part of it is because I think they want to win games while they find the right trade partner.
It's a big part, yeah.
Especially with Brooklyn being so much uncertainty there with the Kyrie situation. I think they would like to be a 2-3-4 seed instead of a 6 seed. You know, I think they believe if they can get this to where it might be awkward for the first couple of weeks, but if you get it, you know, I think Daryl very much wants to get this to December, January, February, so the trade market can be stronger. And if you go through a couple of weeks where it's awkward to get to the point where teams don't feel like they have as much leverage over you, that awkwardness is worth it. So you go back to our podcast from a couple of months ago or weeks ago, or I really have no frame of reference on time anymore.
But we never did, though.
No, we never did, but especially not in this saga. You know, there was, is it more uncomfortable for the Sixers if he comes back or stays? A lot of that depends on how he reacts when he comes here. And that's still sort of true. The only difference is now we're on the doorstep of finding out how he's going to act. And there could be a way where this helps the Sixers pretty substantially. It helps them get through these next couple of months. But it could also, like, this was always where he potentially, if he played his cards the right way from his perspective, he could force his way off the easiest.
Laughing. He's gonna help them. I mean, they need him. They need his defense and all that stuff. But it could blow up in their face because this is gonna be crazy. Sorry,
they could.
He's objectively like going to help them if he is even. Like you said, like 75-80% bought in. Yes, yeah. He will help.
Yeah. So, I truthfully don't know. My guess is this will be super awkward here for the first couple of days or weeks. It'll be super awkward when the fans get on him the first time he's back. And I don't expect the fans to necessarily die down and settle down. I think the next couple of months will not be a pleasant time for him in Philadelphia. But I think... I think he's going to be here until December at least, and I think him coming back was always going to have to, like, here's I guess where I'll pivot to. Are you surprised that they caved so quickly?
No, once the Sixers held the money in escrow and started chipping away, he lost $1 million. You know, that's not pleasant. Well, no, but I think the other thing that maybe Rich Paul and Ben Simmons did not anticipate here, it's like you said, whether he's here, whether he's not here, he was not getting traded for a couple of months. He's just not.
No, so, he wasn't. But they knew that before it. So,
well, I just think they handled it really poorly. I mean, I just, it doesn't have much of an explanation here.
It seems like they never fully committed to being a pain in the ass. Like, they sort of tried to put their toe into being the villain, like sort of test the waters, rattle the cage a little bit. But when you look at where they had leverage on, you know, on media day and the first day of training camp when it was a top national news story. And then their leverage was going to sink, and there was a dip in their leverage. And their next leverage would have came if the Sixers struggled out of the gate. If Joel Embiid had an injury that caused him to miss 5 games. If Tyrese Maxey wasn't good enough or ready yet. That's when they would have gotten even more leverage for the Sixers to make a move to try to prevent a season from slipping away. And that might have taken some time. Like, 5 games isn't enough. But if every loss, every week the Sixers would spend below 500, Ben Simmons would have a little bit more leverage of getting out of Philadelphia early, because Daryl would want to build the team that was going to be there for the rest of the year. So if you're going to make the commitment of, I'm not coming day one to camp, I'm going to miss preseason games, I'm surprised that they didn't have, like, it seems like, and look, this is why the money that you brought up is a reason why holdouts never really last long in the NBA. But if there was going to be, you know, if there was going to be one player who was going to test it, it would be that player who had 4 years left on the contract, because you really had to take that next step if you wanted to get your way. The Sixers had less incentive to move him early in training camp because there was so much time on the contract. If you're going to dip your toes into, like I said, being a pain in the ass, I just thought he was going to have a little bit more resolve, which doesn't mean I expected him to sit out until December or just expect him to sit out all year. But like, 2 preseason games and he's back. Like, I just thought it was going to drag out. I thought this was the end result I expected. I just expect it to drag out longer.
And that's fair. I mean, I think they, in their own way, they went for the clean escape. They went for it all. And for a lot of reasons, here's one of the reasons too. I don't think the Sixers are going to suck at the level that he needed to put a ton of pressure. They're not going to be, they weren't going to be as good. But I don't know, man. You watch Embiid play for a couple minutes, it's like, yeah, they're going to win more games than they lose. They just, sure, they just are. So that was part of it, I think. And I really just think they went for it. They made up every story they could find, every reason to make it as uncomfortable as possible. And Ben Simmons' ideal scenario was, get me out of here. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And what recent NBA history said, like, he tried for the prison break, Philadelphia, his own prison. He needs to do the Shawshank thing where you just keep chipping away. You got to climb through a little bit of shit. All that stuff. Like, it's got to be uncomfortable. That is the way that this works. And I really do think they realize, all right, well, he's not getting traded for a few months. So he's losing. You said it. He's losing a Ferrari a day.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I always thought this was the way he had the best chance of applying pressure on the Sixers was showing up. But if I was advising him, I would have been like, be there from day one, get your money, be a pain in the ass.
Okay, like, but do you think there's a chance that he was like,
no, I don't want to do that?
I don't want to do that.
100%. 100%. I think
which is not the worst thing in the world, honestly. Because
no, I don't think he's a huge confrontation guy.
No. Which is bad in some ways. It doesn't help on the basketball court, but in terms of just, I don't want this awkward workplace. Okay, I get that.
Yeah. But I guess my overall point is like the strategy that they use. Either they had to fully commit to a holdout and give it a couple more weeks to see if the Sixers struggled, or they had to show up and be a pain in the ass. All they really did accomplish here was they cost Ben a little bit of money and a lot of fan sentiment, a lot of fan sentiment. Not that he had a whole lot on his side to begin with, but he certainly doesn't now.
No, this thing's not well executed at all from Simmons' side. There's no way. And the Sixers were in the unique position where I bet you there were a couple front offices in the league where if Rich Paul and Clutch tried this, it would have worked. Maybe these teams didn't have another star level player. So they actually would have been worried about, oh man, if we suck, you know, whatever. Sixers were in a unique spot, and they were, look, to their credit, they were pretty confident about, hey, he's going to be back here. And Doc said that a lot over the last few weeks. He was right. I'm just wondering now that he's back, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? We will see. As Joel Embiid said, it's a good thing for the organization.
Yeah. So that's where we stand. Any other stray thoughts on Simmons and returning and what we'll see? And
I am really curious to see, and look, maybe we won't. Maybe this will all be taken care of behind closed doors. Maybe there will be a truce of some sort. I think you just listen to his comments. Joel Embiid is not a happy camper about this right now. And perhaps the whole team isn't. You know, you kind of heard Danny Green talk about it today, Seth Curry talk about it today. But I do think over their careers, it's a subject we've brought up many a time. Do these guys actually get along together? And I think, as we said last week, this has gotten to the point where, you know, I think that's been an overblown subject for a long time. At this point, especially when they use Joel as a reason why Ben wants out, he is annoyed in a way that he has not been with Ben Simmons in a long time, while he also will mention that he helps the team as well. So, I don't know. Doc has been very confident that, hey, players will get over this really quickly. They just want to win games, all of these things. We'll see. The NBA is, you know, recent years, there's been a lot of drama that has sunk teams. So, it's not as easy as they can just go their separate ways. I mean, maybe they can find an understanding of some sort, but I do think this chemistry dynamic, really, even if Ben does try, it is something that's another variable here that could really submarine this.
Yeah, but if he doesn't try, it could submarine it even quicker and even more drastically. Like if Joel Embiid's sitting there watching him, you know, give 50% effort, that's when you could get a blow up. And I agree with, like, Doc tried this week to paint it as, well, players recognize this as a business, get over it, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I mean, your star player just a week ago called it disrespectful. So we'll see how that goes. And look, maybe Joel Embiid certainly, I think, understands that Ben coming back could theoretically be good for the team, make the most of it. But Joel Embiid, I think, to think that he doesn't have any thoughts and emotions about this would be naive. And if there's one player on the team, you know, maybe Tobias Harris will be like, hey, this is a business, I hold nothing against him. Maybe Danny Green will, who knows? All it takes is Joel Embiid to not be on that side and you've got an issue. So we will,
And I don't want to say that Tobias Harris is going to get over it right away either, because I don't know.
That was just an example of a hypothetical, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, especially if you're I think on the Sixers side for this is if they get Joel Embiid on board, we'd feel like everybody else would fall in line. It's a young team. It's a lot of young players. I don't think Ben was an unpopular player on the
Isaiah
team.
Joe probably doesn't care about what Ben Simmons did.
He doesn't care. Yeah. And if I was Isaiah Joe, I wouldn't give a shit either. So I think that's fine. But yeah, you got to get Joe on board. It's just, it's that simple.
Joe Embiid, not Isaiah Joe. To clarify that.
As you all know by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using the BetMGM lines to make all our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use the bonus code TABASKETBALL, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic. Plus, up to a $1,000 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code TABASKETBALL. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game. Claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
21 plus to wager. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Nevada, New York, and Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. In Ontario, if you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone else close to you, please contact Connects Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 to speak to an advisor free of charge. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Promotional offers not available in Nevada and New York.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use the bonus code TABASKETBALL and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,000 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, you want to pivot to basketball? What an idea, a basketball podcast pivoting to basketball.
Yeah, let's do it.
So as we said at the top of the podcast briefly, where's the score? I don't have the score. I should have.
It was 105-94. Am I getting that right off the top of my head?
125-113 win over the Raptors. And then 115-104
over the Nets. Oh, it was 10 minus 10 on both of those.
You're close. I guess we're not going to go through each game because it's preseason. People are in and out of the lineup. Overall thoughts and impressions, what has stood out to you over those two games?
So let's preface this. I said this last time, but I'm going to quote Seth Curry from today. The preseason is not real basketball.
Yeah.
So not predicting a parade down Broad Street in 7 months or 8 months, whatever it is. Maybe there's a parade, but not a Sixers parade. They can always have a parade for other stuff. They looked good. And they looked good in a way that it was noticeable that Ben Simmons was not there. It looked, I don't know, you watch those games, there's a lot of space out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shooting out
there. Now, look, I'm going to preface everything we say that Brooklyn Nets team
did not give
one shit about playing defense. Not one shit. So we do have to, but yes, that especially that first quarter when Embiid was going to work. Do you feel like now with Isaiah Joe, if he's part of the rotation, you can't just say Joe? I feel like everyone will get which Joe we're talking about. But when Embiid was going to work and he had, you know, four just dead-eye shooters around him in Isaiah Joe, Furkan Korkmaz, Danny Green, and George Niang, he was having his way. He was having his way. And both of those perimeter players played out of their mind against the Nets. Like, just absolutely out of their mind what we had. Isaiah Joe, I think, had 20 points on 6 of 9 shooting. Furkan Korkmaz, 27 on 11 of 19. The two of them combined to shoot 9 of 17 from three-point range. That won't happen every night, although I feel like with Isaiah Joe, it might. Isaiah Joe, I don't know. I haven't seen him miss a shot yet. But yeah, that certainly helps. And also the Nets' complete indifference towards defense helps. But yeah, they look good. Embiid with space. Who would have thought Embiid with space looks good?
I don't think we have seen Embiid though with space, like with a current Embiid, right? I don't think we've seen for maybe there was some last year. There were some tough games without Ben, but it's kind of like I want to watch this version of Embiid that's facing people up from the 3-point line that has all of these new tricks in his bag. It's like they're playing five out. You know, he catches the ball at the top of the key with four shooters, and it's pretty deadly. You're right though. The Nets were playing bad defense. The thing I will say is that they definitely play more aesthetically pleasing basketball without Ben Simmons.
Sure.
And I do wonder. Because again, they didn't even have any point guards in that game. You know, Isaiah Joe is not a point guard. Cork is not a point guard. I think there's a chance if Ben didn't play, the offense might have been okay. Especially with those backup, like maybe stick Maxey on a backup unit and play with Niang and Drummond, who I think both played. They both look good. They've had good preseasons as well. They would have been okay. They would not have been a one seed, but I just think this team, there's enough with the system, there's enough institutional knowledge from last year, they would have been okay. And the other story is that, you know, like, let's say Ben returns. If you would have told me before the preseason, Isaiah Joe was the 12th man. He needs to play.
Yeah. 100%. I'm right there.
He's got to play. Like in New Orleans in a week. I guess that's a week from now. I don't know who you're taking out of the rotation. Is it Shake and Cork? If Ben isn't there, maybe you only have to take one of them out. He's got to get minutes. That dude bombs threes. Not only does he do that, he's showing some off the bounce stuff. He had three dimes to Drummond in pick and roll. Now, I don't think you want him doing that a crazy amount, but first off, that bodes well for the future. It's a good player development story now. But you just need that three-point shooting, whether Simmons is here or not. He fits perfectly with Simmons, too. Yeah. So,
yep.
Yeah, he's got to play.
Who he plays, he's really my number one takeaway of the preseason, is that he, I think, needs to be in that rotation. We need to see what he can do, not only in games that matter, but also in day in, day out. Like, can he keep that consistency going? Can he hold up defensively against enough matchups? You know, I think his shot is very legit. And he's a more consistent shooter than Korkmaz. He has a lot of diversity to his shot that just impresses me every time I watch it. Off a catch, off a screen, one dribble pull up, sidestep, in transition, whatever, what have you. He has that in his arsenal. And the combination of that, and he's been a much better defender than I expected. Now look, he came in, I think, at like 6'3", 170 at the combine. I think he's listed at 175 now. I'm not buying that even a little bit. I've stood next to the dude. He does not weigh 175 pounds. But he moves his feet better than I expected when they drafted him. His defensive fundamentals, I think, are solid. He competes. He's got decent enough length. He has enough in there. Look, if James Harden really cared, would he have just lowered his shoulder and gave him a forearm and been at the rim? Yeah. Sure.
He did it once, by the way. Isaiah Joe, like I've said, he flies back like the Matrix when somebody yeah. puts their shoulder in.
So look, am I saying he can play 30 minutes? No. Like, he needs to just eat everything in sight for a couple of years before he can do that. But I think he should be in that rotation, and selectively, I think he can not only hold up defensively, but as long as there's not a matchup that can exploit him, I don't think he's going to be somebody that's going to be... I would rather have somebody like him who physically can't compete than someone like Korkmaz, who's slow-footed, but might have a chance of holding his own physically. Not that Korkmaz is a, you know, bastion of strength or anything, but you know what I mean. I'd rather have Joe's limitations.
Korkmaz loses his spot, and he challenges him to a bench press competition.
Which
he would win. He would win. I'm not sure if he'd get too many more, but he'd win.
Long arms with bench pressing can be tough too. It wouldn't shock me if that is not Cork's strength. But I think Cork is physically a little bit stronger, just because I think pretty much everyone that steps on an NBA court is physically stronger than Isaiah Joe. But I think he absolutely needs, I think he brings more overall and more consistency. And I don't even think it's going to be, I don't think it like we compare those two because they're both shooters. But like, if Shake Milton doesn't get his shit together, and Ben Simmons is back, and Tyrese Maxey's now backup point guard, I think Shake Milton should be looking over his shoulder too. I think
he should be looking ahead of his shoulder. That Isaiah Joe. Isaiah Joe can look at his shoulder, but Shake Milton's there.
Right. I think it'll be interesting. I think I 100% agree with you. I think Isaiah Joe has to be in that rotation, at least to try it out, see whether or not he sticks. And I quite frankly think he will. I think shooting is so important. And I was listening to Daryl Morey. He was on a conference. I forget, Stats Bomb, I think it was. I should probably look that up. I think it was like Stats Bomb, something of that sort, with our old buddy Seth Part now, helping with the conference. But he was talking about how, you know, three-point shooting is still sort of like the league inefficiency. And, you know, it annoys him a little bit. I'm paraphrasing here. But that with how much that three-point shot is worth, it's tough to find a league with a diversity of strategy. And how even still, when you factor in all of the qualifications, teams still probably aren't shooting enough. And again, I'm paraphrasing. But like, that three-point shot is not something he's forgotten about just because he now has a post-up center. And when you look at how Daryl Morey wants to play, how he values players, and just quite frankly, what would play well off of Joel Embiid, Isaiah Joe with that deep range, that quick trigger, and that diversity of shots to get that three-point shot off, I think he has to play.
I think he has a chance to be a future starter if he keeps this shit up.
100%. 100%. You cannot, anyone who can shoot at a high level is going to have a chance, especially if they even have a prayer of knowing what to do defensively.
I mean, again, you're right. He does have some diverse shooting. Some of that's off the bounce too, so that's interesting, especially if he can pass it a little bit. But I mean, there's a reason. I thought it was funny. He was being guarded by Joe Harris. And I wonder if he went to Joe Harris, how much you get paid after this one? Because I might get paid something like that in a few years if I develop into this type of shooter. And it was last year we saw a lot of this. It was just exciting to see in the G League. I guess he had a little bit of a cameo when the whole team was hit by COVID during the early parts of the year. But, you know, in Summer League and then in the G League, it was just exciting to look up. Okay, he played what? He played 27 minutes, and that's 12 attempted threes? Wow, okay, that's good. Yeah. Seemed like he could have taken more, too.
So far on the preseason, he has 19 three-point attempts in 75 minutes. That 19 attempts is second on the team to Korkmaz, who's actually played fewer minutes. Korkmaz has more three-point attempts per minute, but he leads with 12 three-pointers made. Second on the team is Korkmaz with half. Isaiah Joe is shooting 63.2%. And again, is he going to shoot 60% from three? No, of course not. But I have no doubt that if you give him a season's worth of attempts, he'll hit 40% of them. I have almost no doubt.
Well, and that was the question last year, though, because a lot of times you would look up at those numbers and it would be like 36%, 38%. It's like, okay, the volume is there. The diversity of shooting is there. The form is there. It's just a nice looking shot. He gets it off pretty quickly, too. Everything is good. You just got to make him pass that 40% threshold or something like that. And, okay, yeah, he's not going to shoot 60%, but he's got a little bit of wiggle room to maneuver down there. And he's just got to play. He just has to play because I think you add him in, I see a path to being a much more consistent player than what they got from a lot of these bench guys. With Cork, with Shake, these guys can go absolutely berserk in a game or two. We've seen it. Berserk. This seems to me like a guy who can go semi-berserk for a lot of games in a row.
Yeah.
And that's important.
And when he's not going berserk, he doesn't lose his mind like Shake, which is good. And Korkmaz, too. Like, you don't see Isaiah Joe out there with the random behind-the-back passes in traffic, which is... Look, I we were talking about this last game. I love Cork. Like, he is entertaining. I like the way he plays basketball when it works.
I like that they mostly signed him for $5 million too. I think that's perfectly reasonable, even if he is out of the rotation. It's he's good enough to play in an NBA rotation.
Yep. And like I said, he's an enjoyable person. But I do think that Isaiah Joe has a chance to be. Look, I think he can impact the game more when it's not his shot's not falling. Just because I think he moves more off ball, has a little more gravity especially when he starts getting reputation. I think he's going to have some gravity, a little bit better of a passer, a little better of a decision maker. Cork has some flair to him, but again, he'll make some bonehead decisions, which we haven't really seen from Isaiah Joe. And I think Joe right now is a better defender. I should be in the rotation for sure. That is my main takeaway from a preseason that more or less it's sort of like been a distraction in the preseason, and most of the regular players aren't there anyway. That and Joel Embiid looks really good at basketball still, which is important.
Yeah, it was a good 8 minutes last game.
Yeah. What do you have, like 14 in 8 minutes?
14 and 3 in 8 minutes. And yeah. If you were wondering, we did not get to see last year, we talked about can they press the size advantage against the Nets in a playoff series? Well, we didn't get a chance to see that because the Nets got hurt and the Sixers pooped their pants in the playoff series. But I think in a couple weeks, like on a week and a half from now, the home opener. There's a chance they're going to be able to press their size advantage against the Nets, even if the Nets are trying a little harder.
Yeah, which we allegedly won't now get to see Kyrie playing. We thought that would be Kyrie's season debut, but we'll see. I'm not sure I have too many other main takeaways from Drummond. Looks good for what he is. Again, as long as you're not trying to throw the ball to him, the foul line extended area, and asking him to create, like a little less of that.
He's going to do at least one ridiculous thing, maybe per half. Honestly.
Sure, but he's been good in the preseason. Has a little more juice athletically than I think he's given credit for. Like, yep. Clearly you're not going to want him defending in space, and that's going to be an issue when we get to the playoffs. But in terms of being able to elevate around the rim, he's really good. Really good offensive rebounder. He's been good. George Niang, I like him. I like the hustle. He can shoot the heck out of the ball. Not going to win any speed contests, but, you know, if you can make 45% from three and you're available for a couple $1 million, there's probably a reason for that. But I like him as a fit. More or less, people have looked like, I think, what we expect.
A lot of injuries. You know, are these going to be long-term?
What did they have? They had Shake, Tyrese, Tobias, and Matisse. No, one of those played.
No, those guys were all out.
And Grant Riller was out as well. We'll see whether any of them are available for the preseason finale on Friday. But yeah, they are not the healthiest team at this stage. Not that any of those are serious. I mean, Grant had surgery, of course, but he was at least, he was, I think, going through shooting drills. Not for how far out he is, but none of them should be serious, but who knows?
I mean, we talk about Ben Simmons potentially helping the team if he's trying. Doc said it before the other game. Somebody was like, "What's your point guard situation tonight?" And he said, "Well, we don't have any." Yeah. And the reason they didn't have any is because Maxi and Shake were both out, and Shake is kind of a point guard. I mean, he's kind of an emergency and break glass point guard, but not for this team. He's their backup point guard because they have nobody else. And you know how we know they don't have anybody else? Their third point guard would probably have been Grant Riller, who was also out. So, yeah, Simmons being back, you know, as much as I said, maybe they're going to be a better offense. If you don't have a point guard, I don't know. It's, I don't know, man. It's like Sixers basketball. I don't know. It's, I don't know.
No, I mean, look, we've been pretty consistent that Ben is a big positive in the regular season. Who knows whether or not that will be the case if he's not trying. It would certainly be great to get a little more spacing around that. It wasn't entirely Ben's fault. Getting Isaiah Joe in a rotation, if he is that level of a shooter, will help whether Ben is on the court or not. But it would be great to see one or two more dead-eye shooters, for sure. All right. I think that's probably just about all that I have.
Yeah.
One more tune-up game and a whole lot more of the circus to go, but we have regular season basketball here coming up. Until then, thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.